Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
My name is Derek. I'm here with the Tattered Cover Bookstore, and I just wanted to thank everyone for coming tonight, and also thank you for supporting locally owned independent businesses in your community. Thank you. And I just want to say I'm excited to introduce and listen to tonight's author. I've enjoyed reading both of the books, so I don't know if y'all are here to see him, so why don't we bring him right up? All right, thank you.
Thanks so much, everybody. I'm really excited with the turnout. I know it's gloomy out there, and I really appreciate you guys all coming out tonight to hear me speak and hopefully sign some books, to take some pictures, you know, thumb wrestle, whatever you guys are in the mood for. So, I wrote another book. It's called The Thank You Economy. This book was interesting. You know, I almost wrote this book before Crush It. But what I really pride myself in is writing about things that I think are practical or are real. I think that a lot of people in business especially, and in life, but definitely in business, talk about ideas, right? Oh, they stole my idea. That's my favorite thing. If a friend of yours ever says that to you, please just punch them in the face. You know, we've all got every idea. The ideas are out there. You want to know what's going to be big in 5 years? It's going to be augmented reality. You're going to take your phone. You're going to go shopping. You're going to look at product through your phone. You're going to have information on it. You'll be able to buy the Foursquare and all this stuff, the check-in stuff. You know, it's going to check in for you. You know, we're not going to need to do it. There's a million things I can tell you that are going to come. We all know where things can go and will go, but execution is the game, right? Ideas are wonderful, but if you don't execute against them, they don't mean anything. And I tried not to talk about things that I think if you execute, won't bring results. The reason I wrote The Thank You Economy is because, and listen, I sat for a while thinking about using the word economy. I didn't call this the thank you theory or the thank you time or the thank you moment, strategy, tactic. The word economy is a big boy word, you know, and the reason I used it is because, you like that? I like that too. Big boy word's a good word, right? I like that. The reason I used it is because I think that this is a fundamental shift in the way we all do business. You know, I wrote this book under the context that I view the world and feel that I can speak to, which is, you know, building and executing in the business world. I think this is going to have far bigger impacts than just the business world. In fact, the thank you economy is turning over governments, you know, in the Middle East, you know, right now. And so, you know, if you don't think this stuff is going to impact your business when this is overthrowing governments that have strangleholded their society for 40 years, you are completely out of your mind. You know, this is very major issues. And what's fascinating to me is that we are living through the biggest culture shift of our time. And when I mean of our time, I mean of human beings. The internet is the biggest thing to happen to humans, you know, maybe ever, one of the biggest things definitely in the last 100 years and probably bigger than that. And I think every person in this room, every person in Denver, every person in America, every person in the world, I firmly believe what I'm about to say, and I believe I'm doing it as well, even though I'm saying it. I think we all collectively are grossly, grossly underestimating the internet. And the reason we're doing that is because it's the way we process. It's because it's very early. The consumer internet, I don't need the geeky stuff that the government uses, I understand. But I'm talking about when AOL sent CDs to your actual mailbox. I'm talking about the first time you heard that thing. That is 17 years old. That's like 5 seconds ago. The consumer internet is a baby, and we are just seeing the maturity of it. I don't really buy into the whole like social media, right? You know what social media is? It's the new world for Web 2.0. You know, and it's and Web 2.0 is the new word for e-commerce or internet, or you know, the World Wide Web. Remember the informational highway? That's what we called it. I mean, this stuff is still very new, and social media is just the maturity of the internet itself. It's maturing in the communication part. The commerce part happened first, and we saw that happen. But what we're watching now is an explosion in what's happening in the communication front of the web. And why this matters is because every person in this room and every person on this earth has bought something because of word of mouth. And if you really break down your spend of your wallet, word of mouth has really impacted the way you've spent your money through the years and has had a bigger percentage of your wallet spend than you can imagine. And the only time it didn't was during this last 60-year run, which will be an anomaly in the history of our time, where we moved to suburbs and we got spread out and media, commercials, and push marketing dictated what we bought for a little bit. It's an anomaly because it's going back. Do you know what technology is doing? Do you know what Twitter and Facebook and mobile devices are doing? They're bringing us back to small town rules. They're bringing us back to a time when the merchant had to care about the customer, because if he or she did not, it would affect their business. And I think this is very fascinating. To me, what is fascinating firmly is that technology has put us in a place where I believe every person's grandparents in this room is far better prepared to be successful in 2015 than their kids, even though everybody thinks it's about the kids because it's about technology. Technology can be figured out. The principles of how to do business and the long-term effects of lifetime value and how that all works takes a lot more work, a lot more effort, and dramatically more proper intent. And intent and context are going to become words that are going to matter a whole lot, in my opinion. Let me paint you a picture. We have a client at VaynerMedia, the social media consultant community management company my brother AJ and I have. They're called Harrah's Casino Group, Caesar's Palace Casino. CES, which is the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas during the first week, happens. Our client wants us to watch every conversation going on about CES and see if there's anything we can do. What do they want from us? They want us to send their people into their restaurants and shops. What do we want to do? We want to create relationships that have long-term value for the brand. We see somebody tweet, "Does anybody know where the Junior Olympic hockey match is playing during CES? I'm in between, I'd like to find and watch it." One of my people see that, call Caesar's Palace, ask them if it's playing in the sports book. They said, yes. They said, "Can you reserve a table for them, please?" "Sure, here's the name." We tweet at the person. The person sees it. There's a little chatter. Three or four other people see it. Guy has a good time. The next day, we see this person tweet out, "Checking out of the win, checking into Caesar's." You know what I call that? I call that ROI. Something that is debated if it exists in social media. I don't know how many of you here play in the social media world or agencies or read about it. The question that is always asked is, what's the ROI of social media? And I think the reason that's being asked is because we don't have Nielsen's giving us official numbers of, you know, a Facebook fan is worth $1.47 and a Twitter follower is worth 33 cents, this, that, and the other thing. What's happening is we're living through the very early stages of what social is, and there are no numbers yet that have been reported by old establishments that corporate America will accept and believe as tried and true. That's okay. That's exactly what we lived through when e-commerce came out in 96, 97, 98, 99. There are tons of people here. Let's play a little game. I got up very early to be here today. Flew from New York. So I'd really prefer, and you guys schlepped here, so I'd prefer that you guys do not half-ass me. I don't want your head nod, and I don't want your half hand. I would like you to fully raise your hand. How many people in this room said the following thing to themselves once in their lives? It might have been to themselves, or to a friend. I'm not getting a Facebook fan page. Why would I ever need a Facebook profile? Raise your hand. Raise your hand high. Front rows, look back. I want you to see how aggressive these hands are. There's quite a bit. Thank you. Thank you for not lying. Put them down. Just curious, how many of you have a Facebook page right now? Raise your hand. Front row, I want you to look back. This is the thing that I most obsess about on a daily basis. What I just made you guys do is what I do for a living. For a living, I want to understand what we as human beings say we're not going to do, but we are going to do. There's a lot of people in this room that thought that they would never ever put a credit card into a computer. Yeah, that was a major conversation. If I was on tour and wrote a book in 1997 about how I was going to launch winelibrary.com, that would be the conversation. Somebody would raise their hand and say, but Gary, what are you going to do about all the people that are never going to put their credit card in a computer? And the answer would have been, I'm going to wait. And that's what happens. How many people here, let's go real honest for a second, because this crowd is not just filled with 18-year-olds, so I think I'm going to get some hands. How many people here said they would never get a cell phone because why would they want anybody to contact them anytime they wanted? Raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 21. Thank you. Just curious, of the 21 of you, how many of you do not have a cell phone? Zero. What I write about in the thank you economy is on the verge of being real. It will be very real in 24 to 36 months. And then it will be ruined by marketers in 60 months. And I'm serious. It's true. In 5 years, everything I write about in this book will be ruined. This is a short-term situation that I firmly believe that businesses should take advantage of. But it will be ruined because what I talk about in this book is about caring about customers on a one-to-one basis. One-on-one marketing, something that most people don't want to hear. Big companies don't want to hear it because it's not scalable. Entrepreneurs and small businesses don't want to hear about it because it takes a shitload of time. And when are you going to do your real job? So what I talk about here is difficult to execute. But the return is substantial. And the return is substantial because we live in a word of mouth marketing world. Word of mouth closes business, it always has, it always will. And now with the infrastructure that we have in communication, which are mobile devices and the platforms to communicate, word of mouth is on steroids. We share things that we would have never shared before. We say things on Facebook and Twitter that we would have never called people about. Nobody picks up the phone and calls and says, "Pinkberry strawberry cake is delicious." You didn't pick up the phone and call every one of your friends to tell them that Chipotle is spicy. But you say that now on an everyday basis on these platforms. And what's happening is, when you guys are not the person that's saying it, but you're on the receiving end, and it's coming from somebody that you know, that you have an emotional attachment to, whether it's an acquaintance, a former schoolmate, or your best friend, what they are saying is marketing to you. And it has more value than a billboard does. And it's converting into sales on a daily basis. And it will grow exponentially. And if you look at what's happening, the way we've traditionally marketed, push, billboards, radio, television ads, newspaper ads, magazines, and even when the internet came, banner ads, email services, everything has been push marketing. For the last 100 years, everything has been push. We come up with a good idea, we push it down your throat. If you like the commercial, you buy it because you remember it. If you like the radio jingle, nobody beats the Whiz, nobody beats the Whiz, okay, I'll go to the Whiz, whatever it is. If you think it's funny, interesting, memorable, you will go and execute. The skill set that a business had to have to be successful for the last 100 years is the skill set that I'm using right now in this room. The ability to give a presentation. If it's good, you leave it away and you're like, good, I like that. If it's bad, you say it's bad. The skill set that businesses will need going forward is not going to be what I'm doing right now. It is the skill set of working the room during a cocktail party. That takes a substantial different tact, skill set, emotion base. It is why I firmly believe in the next 50 years, most corporate America CEOs will be women. It is why I firmly believe, God, the ladies love that. Yeah. You like the and I like the fist pump too. That was powerful. And I believe it. And I believe it because I see it. And what's funny for me, guys, to be honest with you, is, and I know a lot, listen, you know, I was talking to the people from the bookstore, like, wow, this is a great turnout, right? Why is this a great turnout? I'm going to tell you why. The reason there's a good turnout tonight and the reason this book's doing well is because it's the thank you economy in action. A lot of you are here tonight because I guilted you to come. I mean it. You came because you felt you had to, because you appreciated whether it was the 1,000, now 40 episodes of wine shows that I put out for free that you wanted to come and thank me for, or the fact that, you know, I've replied to your emails or responded with you on Twitter or Facebook engagement. I've created context with the far majority of you. And that is why you come out. Not because I'm on a TV show or this, that, and the other thing. And that's what matters. Context is what matters. And we now have, for the first time ever, the ability to scale our interactions and create that context. Tonight at 2 o'clock in the morning in my hotel room, I will create context with somebody who lives in Iowa or Croatia or, you know, San Diego. And that will matter long term for my business. And I think that that is the most fascinating opportunity we have ever seen. The ability to engage with the end user directly, not through a middle platform like a radio station or a television, is the greatest opportunity that has ever happened to a business ever. And that has been created because of the internet, and that has been created because we are now all living our lives digitally, more and more every day. Is everybody in this room doing that? No. Will everybody in 7 years? Yes. And that's that. And so what matters about that is not what's going on right this minute, but that every day, slowly but surely, we are for the first time the generation, no matter how old you are in this room or when you started, we're going to be the generation that lives the first ever digital life. That one day your great, 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 great grandkids are going to look at your life on a daily basis based on what you put out on the web. That everyone in this room is creating their legacy. So when you go and complain about the president, your grandkids are going to know about that. And when you go and praise about this, that, the other thing, they're going to know. They're going to know absolutely everything. It's really funny to me, actually. I tell, and by the way, I hope you're sitting right now and thinking about what you're doing for a living and how you're making your dollars and cents. I know a lot of characters making money on the internet that wouldn't be so happy for their great grandkids to know how they made that money. And I mean that. I think we're living through a very interesting time. I hear so many parents, I know a couple friends who I think are making money marketing on the internet in a very questionable way, scolding their children, telling them not to put up pictures of beer pong or, you know, bikini shots on our Facebook because they won't get into college or they won't get a good job. Meanwhile, they're creating businesses that are completely tarnishing their legacy to their family for the rest of their lives. Because they're bottom feeding and trying to convert at the lowest common denominator and making affiliate deals, this, that, and the other thing. So I think it's a very interesting time to think about what's really happening here. Very interesting. We are living through a time where everything we're doing is going to be trackable. It's imprinted forever. It's going nowhere. Today, everybody freaking out because there's reports that the iPhone is documenting everywhere you go. Of course, no shit. Of course it is. Who is confused by that? Like, you may be tricking yourself because you don't want to think that way. It gets way worse than that. Of course it is. We are living in a transparent world. We're living in a very different society, and the way businesses are going to have to act is going to change. Today, BP can spill oil all over our Gulf, and we will not do anything about it. It is my firm belief that in 15 to 20 years, that is the kind of stuff that will hurt a business, because we will be connected in a word of mouth way where we can take action, where you will see movement, where you will see micro trends where 50,000, 500,000, 5 million customers will boycott together and move the needle. Things like Groupon and things of that nature, people are not analyzing this stuff carefully enough. They're looking at it for face value. Think about it as a chess move. When you are now collecting companies, customers that are able to use their collective force to buy products for half the price because it's worth it to the business, this is just one little flirting moment in what's really going to happen. As we connect, you know, you start getting into that union mentality. And listen, I was born in the Soviet Union. I'm not the biggest union fan of all time. But what I will say, what I will say is that the consumer's voice is going to have dramatically more equity than it has today. Dramatically more. And the way we act in those fields is going to matter. How many people here are familiar with the Old Spice campaign, which the guy from the commercial in Old Spice went on YouTube and made 100 unique videos for a bunch of different people on Twitter? Raise your hand, I want to understand the context. Okay, so this is a ridiculously savvy crowd for that kind of stuff. This Old Spice campaign is considered like the greatest social media campaign ever. By the time you leave tonight, you'll realize there's no such thing as a social media campaign. I'll just get right into it. There's no such thing as a social media campaign. A social media campaign is like a one-night stand in a world where you're supposed to marry your customers. Social media is not a campaign-driven platform. Let me explain. Old Spice. I give a whole chapter to it in the book. Perfectly played. I stand here in front of you tonight, a fan of traditional media. I like television commercials. I like print. I do. I like radio ads and billboards. My problem in 2011 is not traditional media. People still consume it. I wrote a book, didn't I? I believe in it. My problem is not the platforms. My problem is the price. We're paying for these platforms like it's 2003 when it's 2011. How many people here have a DVR or TiVo? Raise your hand. How many people here have DVR'd every show they consume on television in the last 6 months? Raise your hand. Okay. How many people here, of anything they DVR, fast forward every single commercial? Raise your hand. So, if 40% of the people that have DVRs in this room fast forward every commercial that they have in their queue, why am I still paying for commercials like it's 2003? That's a problem.
Except the Super Bowl.
Except the Super Bowl. Fair. The only reason to watch the Super Bowl is for the commercials. But for the $3 million a Super Bowl commercial costs, I'd find it far more interesting to allow a company to hire 50 human beings at $60,000 a year to engage with every person that ever mentions their product on the internet and create context with them one-on-one, and I promise you that ROI on that money will be greater. And those are the things I'm fascinated by. So great, we'll spend $3 million to watch a dog jump through a hoop and eat a Doritos and everybody's like all excited and Doritos thinks they did such a great job. Meanwhile, there are millions of people talking about Doritos online right this minute over the course of this year that won't be engaged with, that could create context, that can convert once they have that emotional attachment to that brand. And these are the things that I'm looking to do. How do you scale the humanization? I actually think that as we go more digital, that the real equity is in the people. You know, as this all becomes more tech and app and trinket and gadget and widget and all this new technology, as it becomes more that, the real equity is in the people. Why did Google offer Groupon $6 billion to buy their company? It wasn't for the tech. I can build that site overnight and I don't code. It wasn't for the emails, because if Google put one little ad where their AdWords are for a week globally, they'd have as many emails as Groupon does. It was because Groupon has thousands of salespeople that have tens, if not now hundreds of thousands of relationships that are not replicatable. Because I have a dad who's a merchant. I grew up in a family liquor store business. I know that when a gentleman who owns a Chinese restaurant makes a deal with Groupon, that he's not gonna make a deal with anybody else because he's too busy. He's got his one deal and that's fine, don't bother me. Small merchants don't have it. It's all based on a relationship. Google was willing to pay that money for the relationships, for the scale of those salespeople relationships, not for the tech or for the innovation. And I think that's a very interesting indication of where things are gonna go. It is my belief that the human equity of all this stuff is gonna be quite powerful, that we're living in a world where the acquiring of customers has been mapped. I don't know how techy this group gets, but when you start talking about the way Farmville and the way Groupon and Living Social and Guilt Group and these sites work, they have figured out, they mapped the UX, what's called the user experience, the UI, user interface. They know that you'll click a button if it's yellow and bold. And they know that because they A/B test the living shit out of this stuff. And they test every combination. And so customer acquisition, and they cookie you and you go to all these sites and you still keep seeing Groupon ads, you know why? You've been cookied. That's why. And they know all this stuff, and all this stuff has been mapped. So acquiring customers is a science. And all creatives like me who think we have good ideas and great slogans and ideas, nobody cares about that going forward because the data is going to prove that it's going to be stronger than us and the computer is going to win. the data is going to beat my creative idea that, oh, if we had an eagle and it said, you know, fly on over to me and do it, it's going to work. That shit is over. And so what's going to matter? What's going to have value in a world that looks like that? One thing, lifetime value. Who's going to be the best at keeping people? Once you're in, how long do you stay and how much do you spend? And that is going to be the battleground. And that is the part that I'm most fascinated by. I'm fascinated by that, and I know the only way that happens is through the thank you economy. And what the thank you economy is the absolute platform and execution of out-caring your competition and out-contexting your competition. Do you have a relationship enough with this customer that they will spend their money with you instead of your competitor, even if your competitor is cheaper, and even if, and this is the big one, if it's more convenient? When you are able to accomplish that, you win. Now, convenience is a beast. Every person here has spent money, more money on a product because of convenience. It's closer, it's faster, it's just the way it is. Convenience is a big deal. But I do believe that having context with the customer is going to be the next most important battleground. That you will spend 10 cents more because Pepsi engaged with you online and Coke didn't, and that's why you're gonna grab the soda. And I think it gets really interesting. Let me paint you a picture of what I mean. I think it's about being a service, not being a merchant. No matter what you do, at some level you're a merchant somewhere. And I think the way to be successful going forward is to be a service, not a merchant. When I started building my brand, I used a site called surmise.com, which is now known as search.twitter.com. How many people here go to search.twitter.com every single day? Don't lie, and I will check. I want your username. I'm looking at you when you come up. 3, 4, okay, 5. Search.twitter.com. What search.twitter.com has become is it's the greatest platform ever created for us to basically be able to do data collection, consumer engagement, focus groups. Every single person here, whether it's your business or your genre, is being talked about daily on Twitter. The ability to go into search.twitter like I did and type in the word Chardonnay, Merlot, Pinot Grigio, Bordeaux, Napa Valley. Today I don't do that. Today I just have to put in my name and I have so much engagement that I want to engage with everybody. I was engaging with a couple of you back there a few minutes ago. But in the beginning, when I had no context or users, that's what I used. And that's how I was able to build my brand. I was able to go into the trenches and I did not tell people to buy their Chardonnay from me with free shipping. When somebody said, think about drinking Chardonnay tonight, I said, oh weird, here's a free shipping code to winelibrary.com. I didn't do that. And I didn't say, ironic, I just did a show on Chardonnay 2 weeks ago, here's a link. I did not do that. Now, 99% of the engagements that I see on Twitter do that. The biggest reason people are not successful on social media is because everybody's acting like a 19-year-old dude. Everybody's trying to close on the first move. It takes just a hair of patience to create a real relationship. The reason I'm interested in building this platform and the reason I do the things I do is because I actually don't care if a single person in this room right now buys my book. My interest, my intrigue, my long-term goal is to potentially do business with every person in this room 40 years from now and for the next 40 years. And when you start acting that way and you start acting and treating your customer that way, instead of you wanting to sell them a book right this minute, the entire relationship takes on an entirely different tone. And that is where the business world is going to be battled on. Because your reputation, your social equity is going to matter more than ever going forward because it's being mapped, discussed, shared, and talked about. So why I was successful on Twitter and why I've achieved almost 900,000 fans at this point is because I answered questions. I asked people what kind of Chardonnays they drank and what kind of food they were eating to best give them a Chardonnay example. And then my hope was that they would look at my profile, click on it, go to Wine Library TV, watch an episode, and then start following me. And so that pattern we're replicating with the Campbell Soups and New York Jets and the PepsiCos and the Green Mountain Coffees and the other client, Dr. Scholl's for her, and all the brands we're working with. We want to be a service. And I highly recommend, if you leave with anything tonight, just a couple things. One, that I'm much better looking in person. Two, that there is no such thing as a social media campaign. Really, and I hear that all the time. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because social media is not a push platform. Campaigns are for pushes. You know, your mom didn't think that way. She wasn't like, let me rock it out this week and we'll see what happens. No, she had to parent you forever. Some more than others. No, but really, it's funny. I really thought about calling this, I referenced it earlier. I almost call this book guilt marketing. The reason Crush It sold so well is I felt people, after everything I gave, pay forward. That whole concept felt compelled to buy something for $20 to support me, right? And then I thought about calling this book parenting marketing, because parents that wake up when their kids are 16 and come home drunk and everything's all screwed up and she says, honey, we need to address this tomorrow. No, you need to address that from the beginning. If you're trying to fix something and parent at 17, that ship has sailed. And so that's how I view companies are going to wake up. I know there's people sitting in here not understanding the ROI of social, not understanding what you get for your return of all that time. Where is the real value? There's other things that convert better. And these companies and individuals in this room are going to wake up in 5 years and are going to say, honey, we need to take care of this, and it's going to be too late. Because what's going to be happening in this little golden pocket right now when everybody's trying to figure it out is certain companies are going to run fast and create context with the customer, and the other people are going to try to wait for the reports to come out or show me somebody who in our space who's done it well or whatever the excuse is, and they're going to wake up and the relationship's not going to be there. And unlike past marketing platforms, money is not going to save you in social. I bought the word wine on Google AdWords for 10 cents 10 years ago. We were the first advertiser. And it worked. I got a lot of customers, and that was good for my business. Today, that word is $9, and that's what wine.com pays for it. Wine.com was able to use money to catch up to my knowledge and understanding. I'm spending every minute of the last 5 years creating context with people. Tomorrow, if Wine Spectator wakes up and realizes what's been happening, they're not gonna be able to spend money to make context with 900,000 people. They can't just retroactively answer people's questions about what wine goes with chicken, what wine recommendation they would get for their wedding. The person's, 5-year anniversary happened 4 years ago. You can't answer the champagne question for them, can you? The one that created the context with me and that person that will always make them support what I do. It's not gonna happen. Just like if I met you now and wanted to be your best friend in the world, I'm pretty charismatic and fun and I can make some damage happen in a couple weeks, but I promise you, your best friend is still gonna be beating me because I can't make up all those experiences, stories, events, on and on and on. And that's what matters in our lives. If you go, you wanna understand how to run your business, stop every 90-year-old that you see for the next year and you ask them what they care about and what they remember. I promise you, they're gonna care about the emotional things they did with people. It is every business's job going forward to humanize their business. Let me explain. It's gonna get weird. Ready? The pet dog, Spot, let's call him Spot. In the 1970s and 60s, by percentage, data, was an outside animal. Spot lived outside. If 60s and 70s, you drove around, there was a lot of dogs outside. Now, not so much, okay? Spot now, in 2011, is an inside animal, by data. Went from being inside about 30% to about 89%, indoor. But Spot is ambitious. Spot doesn't live just in the home. Spot lives in your bedroom. By data. And you don't even let your kids in your bedroom. But Spot is really ambitious. Spot lives in your bed. And you know what else Spot does? He wears better clothes than you do. We've started clothing Spot, really nice. And spot eats gourmet food more often than you do. What we have done as human beings over the last 30 to 40 years is that we have humanized the pet dog. What I'm willing to tell you here tonight, and it's probably gonna be the first time you hear it, and it could take a good decade, but bear with me and watch it happen. We as human beings will humanize logos. It will happen. I know it because I'm living it now. I'm not predicting, I'm just telling you something I see early that I know a lot of people aren't seeing yet, and you'll see in the next 5 to 7 years. I play the same card all the time. I don't come here and start trying to guess what's gonna happen because I know people have flip cams and are recording everything I say. I wanna be right. So I talk about things that I see very early on that I know a lot of people aren't seeing. We manage a brand called Brisk. It's an iced tea. What the hell does an iced tea talk about on Facebook and Twitter? I'm wet today, you know, what do you talk about? You know? Some of you are nasty, I saw the faces. Awful. What we have done is we have taken the persona of the consumer of the product. So we know that Brisk's user is very urban. So we've talked about urban things, things that we think and have seen our customers want to talk about. Whether it's hip hop or basketball or anything else, skateboarding seems to be an interesting crossover. We have talked to our consumers as if we are one of them. And now we see things like people, when a new song comes out, say things like, at Brisk, what do you think about Nicki Minaj's new song? And we reply, taking the persona, we think Nicki Minaj has ass implants. We don't talk like we're corporate. That's not a very corporate thing to say. And watching the engagement and what it's meant to the demo and some of the pockets that we've done this in for spikes in sales has been remarkable. Because when you go to 7-Eleven and you just talk to your boy Brisk about LeBron's 55 last night and you go to the window to buy a product, guess what you're buying? And that matters. And so I believe that we will be humanizing brands, and the brands that can act the most human and not try to sell you, because the human that's a salesman is the one you turn off at the Chamber of Commerce event or, you know, wherever you may be where you're getting sold real hard, even at the Little League game, right? It's the one that most tries to provide value. And I think this is extremely fascinating. And we are living through massive gaming mechanics. I mean, guys, every soap opera is going out of business, right? No more Guiding Light, One Life to Live. I know everybody's very sad. ABC's now canceling a couple. There'll be none left. Do you know why? Farmville. Period. That's right. Because that is what's happening. And so if you hate Tide or Dove, you want to reach mom, you now have to have like products in games to get to mom. I mean, this is what's happening. These are major culture shifts. I'm supposed to pay for billboards? I don't know about you guys. I'm scared to drive. People aren't looking at billboards. They're not looking at the fucking road. Go home tonight. Do me a favor. Look at three people when you pass them. One is texting. We don't need mothers against drunk driving. We need mothers against texting badly. I mean, so why are we buying billboards to reach people? They're not even looking at the road. And so these are major, major shifts. We are doing things. How many people here have spent money on an application for their phone? Raise your hand. There's nothing else to say. This is from a generation and a group of people that 4 years ago, before Apple created this culture shift, would have not paid for anything online. We were all in, remember? 36 months ago, we weren't paying. We were good. We're never gonna pay for anything again. It was awesome. And then one culture shift, mobile, new platform, new set of rules, and now we pay. And now you're seeing the New York Times do what they're doing because of the culture shift of the apps. They found their opening and they need to do it. Because if you wanna stay alive, you gotta charge. You know, it's hard to sustain any other way. It's the way it is. And so I think what I'd like for everybody in this room to know, and what I'd like them to understand about this book, is it talks about the culture shifts. It talks about the practicality of when the game changes on you. There were 7 very smart people in 2001 sitting in a boardroom, all Harvard graduated, all made millions and millions of dollars in their career, and the guy said, "Dick, what do you think about this Netflix thing?" He goes, "I've never heard of it." "Rich, do you think it's a concern of ours?" "Absolutely not. Nobody's going to do that." "Peter, no, people like going to the stores." And those 7 men at Blockbuster made a big mistake. And they put themselves out of business. If all the smart people always knew where the world was going, IBM would have never let Microsoft happen. Microsoft would have never let Google happen. Google would have never let Facebook happen. Facebook would have never let Twitter happen. And on and on and on. Culture shifts are gonna happen. No matter how good or bad you are, they're gonna happen with or without you. There's way too many people in this room right now that want it to be a certain way without, instead of executing in the way it is. All I hear is like, "Well, but Gary, this is bad for the kid." Gary, but I'm not here to judge on whether this is good, bad, or indifferent. I'm here to execute in the reality of the marketplace. And that's that. And I think that's a very important thing that people need to understand. The marketplace is changing. And you know how? Fast and hard. And it's going to continue to. Fast and hard. And a lot of people are going to go out of business, and a lot of people are going to do a lot of business. And your ability to understand why and how to act in it, will determine your financial success. And by the way, your social success as well. And many other things that this stuff is impacting. I'm just talking about the stuff that I feel I have the biggest grasp on. And so, I'm excited about it. And you know, a big thesis of mine is it's not about talking, it's about listening. So I think I'll get to that part of this presentation. I think it's important for me to do as much Q&A as possible. So thank you guys so much for coming out. And I'd like to do a good amount of Q&A right now. I cut my talk a little short to engage. So thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.